It's time for Dishing Up Nutrition with licensed nutritionist Darlene Kvist. Each week, Darlene explains the connection between what you eat and how you feel. Stay tuned to hear practical, real-life solutions for healthier living through good nutrition. Dishing Up Nutrition is brought to you by Nutritional Weight and Wellness.
Slow down, you move too fast. You got to make the morning last. Just kicking down the cobblestones, looking for fun and feeling groovy.
Well, welcome to Dishing Up Nutrition. I'm Darlene Kvist, licensed nutritionist, and I thank each of you for listening today. I think we have a very interesting show planned because we have a nationally recognized food and nutrition expert as our guest today. You know, in a few minutes, Marion Nessel, who wrote the very popular book, Food Politics and How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, as well as her latest book, What to Eat, will join us. So get your questions ready for Dr. Marion Nessel. And our co-host is Christina Swigert, licensed nutritionist and a mother of two young children. And because of her children, Christina has developed special skills in the area of fertility, nutrition for pregnancy, nutrition for baby and child. And she answers all the questions that come in and all the emails about Ask the Nutritionist. And that's on the Mom Talk website if people want to check that out. And she answers all the emails that come into our office, or a lot of the emails. Plus, of course, she sees clients, don't you?
Right.
She sees clients in White Bear, and she sees clients in St. Paul. So she's a pretty busy lady.
Yes. I usually have a few things going on in my life outside of work, too.
Well, with two small children, you certainly, and a lot of other things going on.
Yeah. So our whole focus today is really and every day, to teach people what to eat. And in fact, this Tuesday, I am going to be teaching a class. Very pleased for this opportunity. It's preschool and early education teachers, and we're going to be talking about what children should be eating for better focus, attention, and behavior. So I know it's going to be a great class. And nutrition is a very important topic for many people, and I personally believe that we really have to start teaching children at a young age what to eat. And Dr. Marion Nessel has really dug into how large food companies are influencing what kids eat and what they want to eat.
And, you know, because of the influence that TV commercials have on children, my daughter, Christy, only allows her children to watch children's programs from Canada that doesn't allow advertising or sponsorship. No McDonald's characters or SpongeBob. It may surprise moms who use TV as a convenient babysitter, and it's an easy thing to get into. Mm-hmm. It's hard not to.
Right.
That they are actually creating a desire for junk food in their children, even very young children, as young as a few months, which is just amazing to me. It is sometimes hard to believe that early TV watching may be causing your children to become cookie monsters.
Yes, and it's interesting. An article was just recently published in the Journal of the American Medical Association, and they did some studies with kids on how they liked foods based on the packaging. So they gave different groups of kids the same food, some with McDonald's packaging and some with plain packaging. And even just plain baby carrots, these preschoolers thought the ones that were in the McDonald's packaging tasted better than the ones that weren't. And it was they tied it back to TV. The kids who watched more TV in their home were more apt to want the food that was packaged with McDonald's.
It's very interesting to see how that influences what we eat, isn't it?
Right. It's amazing. Well, why don't we go ahead and introduce our guest, Dr. Marion Nessel. Marion has a PhD in molecular biology and an MPH in public health nutrition. And like Darlene said, she has authored some books, three actually, Food Politics, How the Food Industry Influences Nutrition and Health, Safe Food Bacteria, Biotechnology and Bioterrorism, and then her latest book is What to Eat, and it's a guide to navigating the supermarket and really helping you to make sensible food choices. And of course, she does more. She is a professor in the Department of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University, and I've actually seen her sometimes on some national TV programs talking about nutrition.
So welcome, Marion. We're pleased to have you today.
Well, glad to be here.
Oh, you know, we have many loyal listeners on Dishing Up Nutrition, and I'm sure they will be interested in how food companies advertise to children. So could you talk about McDonald's and Burger King and General Mills and how much money they spend on advertising and how people are starting to buy all those foods?
Well, the study that you talked about is just the most perfect example of marketing in action. I mean, somehow parents tell me that they don't have televisions in their house, they don't take their kids to McDonald's. They have no idea how their children can have those kinds of opinions so early in life without any obvious sign of exposure. I consider that brilliant marketing in action.
I agree with you.
Companies spend about $15 billion a year to market directly to children.
$15 billion,
yeah,
you
something
said?
Something like that. Something on that order. The exact amount isn't known.
Yes.
But there are three reasons why they do it. The first is brand loyalty. They want kids to recognize McDonald's or whatever other brand it is and choose that brand throughout life and associate good food and happy eating with it.
Marian, talk about a little bit. What are some of those techniques that they use for branding that, you know, people might not recognize? You know,
Ronald McDonald is the most recognizable, iconic figure in the country. You know, I mean, in Super Size Me, the movie that Morgan Spurlock made a few years ago, he interviewed kids and showed them pictures of the President of the United States and religious figures, and all of them recognized McDonald's more than they did any of the others.
Yes. That brings it down to the level that people really understand, I think.
Yeah, I mean, it's just they really know how to appeal to what kids are interested in. They go to a lot of trouble to learn how to do that, and they put it into practice. But I think the other reasons are really even more important. The second one is to get kids to pester their parents to buy the foods, which anyone with a two-year-old in a supermarket can see in action. But the third one is the one that troubles me the most, and that is trying to get kids to think that they're supposed to eat foods that are made specially for them, kids' cuisine, foods in special packages with cartoons on them, and that kids know more about what they're supposed to be eating than their parents do.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the part that I think is most insidious because it really undermines parental authority around nutrition issues.
I agree with you 100%. And Christina, your kids are how old again?
4 and 1.
Yes. And so are you seeing some of this in action?
A little bit with my 4-year-old. But I think what's so important is just for parents to talk with their kids on a regular basis about what good nutrition is. And I, you know, I even talked to her about, you know, she'll see the pictures. She doesn't always know the foods that are in there because we don't eat those things. But and then I always use it as a good teaching opportunity to really talk about it. So I try and keep the dialogue going as much as possible.
Well, that's great. I think parents should teach their kids critical thinking around advertising. And that's exactly what everybody needs to do because otherwise your kids are just going to be part of that whole thing and be targets.
But, you know, Marian, it's like the parents have to have that some of that critical thinking, too.
Well, that would be nice.
So, you know, in your book, you talked about, and I think this was Food and Politics, is that you talked about companies that are actually creating counting games. And, you know, I'm an old past teacher, and actually I was a special ed teacher, and we never use food as to count objects. But I think they do now in classrooms.
Well, I don't know whether they're doing it in classrooms because there's been so much fuss about it lately. But I have a little collection of books with Oreo cookies and various kinds of sweetened cereals. And the Oreo cookie book is my favorite because it's a countdown book. You start with 10 cookies and then there were none. And, you know, if you think about it, if a child eats 10 cookies, those are 50 calories apiece, that's 500 calories by the time they finish counting to 10.
So our food companies are doing more than teaching kids how to count.
They're teaching kids how to eat.
They're teaching kids how to eat.
And that these are the foods that they're supposed to be eating. That's the point that I think is the one that troubles me the most.
Right, exactly. Right.
Another thing that we saw, which really surprised me as a former and still sometimes current athlete, was the whole issue, and I hadn't heard about this, is that high school, and I don't know if it's high school or college athletes, soccer players, football players, cheerleaders, were being sent all these Coca-Cola cards to use for themselves and give to their friends?
Oh, yeah. The teenage daughter of a friend of mine was the first person to show me these, and she was a leader in her school, and so she was sent a bunch of these cards with coupons for discounted purchases of fast food products of one kind or another, and the idea was that she would give them out to her friends. And I asked her, I mean, she didn't know that, but the Coca-Cola people explained that, and so I asked her what she did with them, and she said, oh, I gave them to my friends. That's called viral marketing, and it's gotten much, much more sophisticated since so much of this goes on at the over the internet now.
Right. You know, I think that if people are not taking classes from us or listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, people are often listening to TV Nutrition. And so Marion, where do you think the public generally gets their information about nutrition?
Well, I think they get it from food companies. The government doesn't put any money into nutrition education for the public. It does dietary guidelines and pyramids and things like that, but nobody really knows about them or knows how to access them. And what you really learn about is from health claims on food packages.
Yes, I agree with you. It's kind of amazing when we start to look at some of those things. And there's more and more of those food claims on packages now, I think.
There is indeed. I've just picked up a box of Cheerios that says you can lower your cholesterol by 4% in 6 weeks if you eat 2 servings of Cheerios a day.
You mean
right.
That's
actually
not true?
Four servings of Cheerios a day. Oh, yes, if it's part of a low-fat, a diet low in saturated fat and cholesterol and not too high in calories.
So talk about that just a little bit more now, Marion. Say that one more time. This
well, the
was
health
a study
claim on the package says that if you eat a cup and a half of Cheerios cereal twice a day, you will lower your cholesterol by 4% in 6 weeks, provided that you also eat, but this is in very small print, provided that you eat a diet that's low in saturated fat and cholesterol.
And you know,
and you're not gaining weight at the same time, although that's not said. And it refers to a study that was done in 1998 that's actually not available anymore because the journal that it was published in is now out of print. Mm-hmm. And it was paid for by the maker of the cereal.
Okay. Right. You know, and that's one of those examples that we use in our classes all the time, Marion. And I actually got in a little trouble once when I was talking about it in my class because that company happens to be in our town.
It's
a hometown company.
Oh, dear.
Marion, we have to take a little short break here. So you're listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. Here is some food for thought. Food companies compete fiercely for your food dollars, spending up to $30 billion annually in marketing and advertising to convince you to eat more. They want you to eat even when you're not hungry and keep eating when you're full. So they might be supersizing you just a little bit by their supersizing everything. So if you have questions for us, and I'm sure we have a lot of listeners today, our number here is 651-641-1071, and we'll be back in a minute.
Hey, want to go for a bike ride this weekend?
No, thanks. I'm exhausted. Work never lets up, and I lay awake thinking about what I have to do the next day. By Saturday, all I want to do is read or watch movies.
What happened to my biking partner? Do I need to find a new one?
Maybe I need what you're taking. How do you find the energy?
Nutrition.
Yeah, right.
I'm serious. You can't believe the difference changing my eating has made. I used to be dragging by Friday, too. Then I went to Nutritional Weight and Wellness for a personal consultation. They set up an eating plan for me with a variety of real foods, none of those canned shakes, rice cakes, or frozen mini dinners. I eat chicken, salmon, steak, eggs, asparagus, wild rice, real butter, and berries and cream. I get plenty to eat. I feel great. I have no more heartburn. I even have better moods.
So food is the answer to my fatigue and insomnia? It can't be that simple.
It was for me. You should call them. I'm glad I did. Their number is 651-699-3438 or visit their website at weightandwellness.com.
It's apropos of nothing. He says his name is William. I'm sure he's Bill or Billy or Matt.
Welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. I am Christina Swigert, licensed nutritionist, and I'm here with Dar Kavis, licensed nutritionist, and we have Dr. Marion Nessel with us today, author of Food Politics and her current book, What to Eat. And we are discussing the role large food companies play in our current epidemic of obesity, diabetes, and heart disease.
Hi, Marion. I have a question for you. This is Dar. And I just was wondering if there's something in that your book that you really want people to learn, or something that you really want people to look at.
Well, I think what the big revelation for me when I was researching both of my books was how strongly the food environment influences what we eat. There's now, since the books came out, there's been even more research showing that people, when confronted with a large portion of food, will eat more calories. If there's a vending machine that's near you, you will eat more calories from that vending machine.
I think, Marion, you know, one of the things that I even notice, it's myself and Christina are both nutritionists, and when we're served large portions, we have to step back and think about it so we don't eat it. Right, Christina?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
I think
you have
that's
to do work.
Yes.
If somebody gave you a smaller portion, you would eat the smaller portion and you wouldn't have to think about it.
That's right, exactly.
And so the default in our society is to eat too much. The entire food system is set up in order to get us to eat more food, not less. And I explain that as a result of the fact that we have an enormous overabundance of food, 3,900 calories a day for every man, woman, and child in the country. That's not what people are eating. That's what's available.
That's what's available, isn't it?
That's what's available. But companies have to sell that. And they have to sell it in an environment in which, if they're a publicly traded corporation, they are expected not only to make a profit, but to grow that profit, to make a larger profit every 90 days.
Every 90 days they have to make an additional profit?
Well, they have to report corporate growth to Wall Street every 90 days. So food companies, all corporations have to do that, but food corporations are under special pressure because they are trying to sell their products in an environment in which there's twice as much food available as the country needs on average. So in order to do that, they've had to change society. And the ways in which they've changed society are by making portions bigger, by making it easier to eat more food in more places more often, and by making it socially acceptable to eat all day long and to snack, and making it socially acceptable for kids to drink soft drinks all day long and have vending machines in schools. Those are all changes that have taken place within the last 25 years, exactly in parallel with rising rates of obesity.
Exactly, and diabetes, and heart disease, and all the other rising rates of health problems.
That go with it.
Yes, Marion, we have a caller on the line here. Missy, you have a comment for us. Hi, Missy. Welcome to the show.
I'm a licensed health teacher. It's the first teaching licensure I got, and I have a passion for it. I'm teaching something else right now, but I taught it last year, and I'm mentoring another teacher this year. And I totally disagree. I large part disagree with your expert, because the government does do quite a bit to influence children in health education and especially nutrition. There are Minnesota state standards that we have to meet. And if you go to the National Department of Health website and the FDA website, there are so many resources for teachers to get, free resources for curriculum. And every Minnesota school now is required to have a wellness plan. So, I mean, there are so many things that the government is requiring, and the resources that are available for teachers and that students are required to learn.
Well, I'm really glad to hear you say that, because my understanding of the federal wellness policy is that it was up to states and local regions to interpret them themselves. Schools are required to have wellness policies, but communities decide what those policies are, and you must be in a community that has a really good one. I think that's great. When I go on to the federal website, what I see is Shrek teaching kids how to be more active, and that concerns me very much, because it seems to me that that's part of identifying cartoon figures with food products and teaching kids that they're supposed to be eating food products that have Shrek labels on them.
So it's you're taking a deeper look at this, aren't you, Marion, than what a lot of people do?
Well, I think it's terrific if there are
yes.
schools and districts that are doing this,
I
and
agree
if there
with
are
you.
Resources that they're finding useful. That's really wonderful. I think we need more of that.
And actually, I think that we do have, there are some communities here in the St. Paul, Minneapolis, St. Paul area that are really taking a look at this. And there are a couple of schools that are serving very healthy lunch programs. But
I always think of Minnesota as being a little bit ahead of the game.
So anyway, Missy, thank you very much for the call. Did you have any other comment? Oh, I think we lost our caller. Yep, I think we did. So I think that was a great call. And, you know, if other people have questions or comments for Marion, just give us a call. It's 651-641-1071. We'd love to talk to you today.
Right. Well, Marion, we've got another thing that we just want to bring up. Is that, you know, we are hearing a lot that food companies are responding to the concern about all the high sugar, trans fat foods they produce. And we just were wondering what your response to that is. If are they really responding and making changes, or are they just really trying to pacify citizens to avoid lawsuits?
Well, I think they're doing both. On the one hand, they certainly are making these changes. On the other hand, they're being forced to out of fears that they will be sued or that regulation, or even worse, that regulations will be passed. Unfortunately, the food industry doesn't have a great history of self-regulation. Again, you know, I think the food companies are really stuck in a very, very difficult position because they have their business is to sell food, and their business is to sell more food, not less.
Yes, exactly.
And if they could sell more healthy food, I'm sure they would be happy to do it. But unfortunately, the unhealthier ones are more profitable. So it puts them in a very difficult position. And they're all struggling to try to figure out how to deal with that problem.
So, Marion, we're going to take another caller. B, hi there. You have a comment for us?
Yes.
Hi, B.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Oh, sure. We can.
Okay, yeah. I wanted to respond to that last caller who said that the government is really doing a lot to help instill healthy food in schools and in the public school system because, quite frankly, that might be true as an appearance, but there's really absolutely nothing in the regulations around food in public schools that is mandating schools to make healthy choices. And if you work within the government branch and you see what goes on within the FDA and the USDA, you know that everything is politics. And a lot of the schools are forced to buy certain commodity products because they get them for free, and it's part of the government recommendation around food that goes into the school system for lunches. So they're forced to buy so much product that is like conventional, unhealthy. A lot of it is trans fats. A lot of it is highly processed food because they get it for free and they can just throw it in and heat it up, and it's already pre-made food.
And to be, you know, that's my idea of what, if you walk into a school, that's kind of the stuff that I see most often being served. I mean, the school breakfast programs are, you know, pretty bad.
Right. And so there's a lot of funding that goes on in the school system that kind of buys their way in, you know, free pop machines for schools that will house Coca-Cola and Pepsi and things like that. And so I guess I disagree with that last caller. I think that there may be an appearance if you go on to those websites and you look at what the so-called pyramid is. But quite frankly, if you were somebody who was an alien and came into this country and went onto that website to try to figure out how to eat healthy,
you would
end up unhealthy.
You'd be baffled.
I just wanted to make that comment.
I think both things are going on. I think on the one hand, there are schools that really have not been able to do anything because they're so financially strapped. There are other schools that maybe just have this wonderful configuration of parents, teachers, principals, school food service director, who somehow have managed to make this a priority and make it work. And I know that in New York City, where I live, the school system, which is enormous and has a million students in it, literally a million students and 1,500 schools and just this massive undertaking, are struggling as hard as they can to try to source better ingredients and have better foods for it. But it's really a big job and very, very difficult to put into practice.
Exactly. So, B, we love your comments.
Thank you. And you guys are doing a great job helping people understand how to make healthy choices, and really it doesn't start on the USDA website or in the public school. It starts in home, and you and I both know that, Dar.
We do.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thanks, B. So, Marion, we have to take a break.
Okay.
You know, we're having a great discussion with Marion Nessel, and just maybe if you're carrying 40 extra pounds, it might have something to do with the goal of our large food companies to get us to eat more. So if you have more questions today, call us at 651-641-1071, and we'll be back in a minute.
Is it time you found a new approach to an old health problem? Nutritional Weight and Wellness offers classes and consultations to address everything from weight loss to diabetes to depression. Just choose the format and location that best meets your needs. You can count on a warm reception and sound nutritional advice from their caring, committed staff. First, envision taking a class with a group of people who are also health-minded as you learn to eat in a way that makes you feel better today and builds a foundation for a healthier tomorrow. Next, imagine that you're meeting individually with a nutritionist to discuss your health concerns. You leave with a personalized eating plan that fits your lifestyle and strategies to implement it. Now, don't you feel good about having made this investment in yourself? Nutritional Weight and Wellness invites you to call them at 651-699-3438. Offices conveniently located in St. Paul, Wyzetta, and White Bear Lake.
Call Nutritional Weight and Wellness today, 651-699-3438. That's 651-699-3438.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition. If you have questions, again, or comments for Dr. Marion Nessel, author of Food Politics and What to Eat, please give us a call here at 651-641-1071. And Dr. Nessel actually has a great chapter about the safety of eating fish. So if you also have questions about that, feel free to give us a call. Or you can even pick up Dr. Nessel's book, What to Eat.
So, Marion, I don't know if you want to make a couple of comments about the food safety. I think we have a lot of people that are actually are interested in that topic. I know when we're teaching classes, we get that questions all the time.
And well, we have a food safety system in this country that is pretty antiquated. It developed in 1906 as a result of Upton Sinclair's The Jungle, and it hasn't changed all that much since. And that system was devised to deal with problems that could be seen with the naked eye. It was kind of before bacteria and viruses. And so the system for protecting the food supply, certainly the meat supply, relies on inspection. You look at it, but you can't see bacteria.
No,
so that's a whole big problem. We don't have a farm-to-table safety system that requires producers of food from farm-to-table to follow standard food safety procedures. We only have a piecemeal system that affects some of the foods, and so things get into trouble. That's why the spinach episode happened last year, because there isn't farm-to-table food safety procedures for growing vegetables, although they're starting to work on them after the fact. And, you know, there was a peanut butter recall. There was something with lettuce and scallions. And
yes.
There's just one thing after another.
Well, if you were going to go to the market to buy fish, what would you buy now?
Fish?
After reading that.
Oh, first of all, I would find a fish seller that I thought actually knew something about fish. And that might not be so easy to do. I mean, there are places where there are very knowledgeable fish sellers. I would want my fish seller to know what the fish was, where it came from, whether there was any testing for toxins of one kind or another, what the fish is, whether it was frozen, whether it's been dyed. And if people working there couldn't answer those questions, I might not buy it at all.
So, Marion, when you talk about testing for the fish, what kind of chemicals are you looking at when you're saying that to people?
Well, I'd like to know whether the fish that are caught and brought into this country and brought into supermarkets have methylmercury in them, for example, or whether they have PCBs, or whether anybody has thought about it at all, and how clean they are.
And are there certain areas that we know that would probably be a problem for most people?
I mean, fish that are in the North Sea off the industrial coast of Europe tend to be more contaminated than fish that are grown in South America or even off the United States.
Okay.
That's why country of origin labeling is so important.
Okay.
And you're not talking about farm-raised fish.
Yes, and there is country of origin labeling required for fish. It's the only product that is required to have a label that says where it was where it was fished, whether it was farmed or wild, and whether it's been dyed.
So, Marion, one of the questions that we get in our classes all the time, Would you buy farm-raised salmon or would you buy wild-caught salmon?
Well, I would buy wild if I could get it and afford it and if it were in season.
Okay.
One of the problems is that wild-caught salmon is advertised in many fish. I mean, I consider the fish market to be the wild west of the supermarket. It's kind of where anything goes. And that's why it's so important to find somebody that you can trust. And how you do that is a really complicated issue. You have to ask your fish seller a lot of questions. If they can answer the questions, then you're way ahead of the game, but most of them can't.
Okay.
When reporters have gone into fish stores and bought wild salmon out of season, they've discovered that it was farmed salmon being sold as wild, and you can't tell the difference because the farmed salmon are dyed.
Oh, okay.
And they're dyed to look exactly like the wild salmon.
Wow. So, Marion, I think we've got callers on the line here, and I think we better grab some here. Oh, well, I guess we need to take a break first, so... I believe that Dr. Nessel's message is very similar to our beliefs. You know, healthy eating is simply a matter of common sense. You know, she says all things in moderation. Avoid extra sugar and bad fats. And so if you have questions for us, call us at 651-641-1071, and we'll be back in a minute.
Well, welcome back to Dishing Up Nutrition, and it is not too late to sign up for our Weight and Wellness class series. Nutritional Weight and Wellness is offering evening classes, Saturday morning classes, and we also now have some classes that we're calling Let's Do Lunch, and that's at each of our offices from 11:30 to 12:30 p.m. So there's probably something out there that can fit your schedule, and the lunch one is spending 1 hour a week over the lunch to really help you regain your energy, lose your extra pounds, reduce your cholesterol and blood pressure. So if those are things that you would like to sign up for, feel free to give our office a call today at 651-699-3438 and really feel better this fall.
So we're going to take a few callers here. And Rhonda, you have a comment for us, a question?
Yes, I do.
Hi there.
I have a comment.
Welcome.
About the program that
is provided
for the schools. And I teach first grade, and we had a woman come in to us from our county, and she taught for about 8 weeks, half an hour every week. And basically she was teaching the food pyramid. So it was good that she was stressing the kids should eat fruit and vegetables, because I feel like in my situation a lot of my kids don't even know what a lot of the vegetables are. But she still did not have the information that, you know, you teach. And it really, it's very sad. I also belong to a fitness center for women that's quite well known nationally and internationally, and they gave out 8 items this week that were considered very healthy. Every one of them had hydrogenated fat or flavorings in them, and there was only one product that was healthy, and that was Mrs. Dash, a little seasoning packet. Everything else was just, it was not healthy. And the women were so excited, oh, this will be good, we can lose weight. And, you know, it was like 90-calorie snack-type portion, which was, you know, translate to pure sugar eventually. But it was like, we need to be educated as a country.
Well, you know, that's true. We need to be educated as a country. And I think Marion has been trying to do that for a long time, to educate people on how to really look at products a lot better. But it is sad. And it's, you know, it's like people are still not, I don't know, as colleges are not keeping up, or they're not keeping up with the research or whatever it is. But people are coming out of school and they might be nutritionists or dietitians, and they're still not really very well educated, it seems like. And they don't have all the newest information that makes a difference with people. And then again, you know, it's like your fitness club is just giving out samples that somebody gave them. It's a marketing ploy again for a food company. So, but you know, you're smart. You've got it figured out. So that's great.
Well, we have a joke hanging on a refrigerator. It says the government food pyramid must be working. And then you see this man walking down the street, and they say, more Americans than ever are looking like pyramids. Thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for the comments. So, Marion, do you have anything? I don't know. Were you able to hear Rhonda's comments?
I really could only hear just the last part of that. The rest of it just disappeared. But the, I think that what I was interested in what you were saying about training of nutritionists is, you know, one of the most important things I think needs to be trained is what we call critical thinking in the university. Mm-hmm. That is questioning authority and asking for the reasons behind things. Nutrition research is really very, very complicated. I think much more complicated than people realize. It's extremely difficult to do because people don't make very good experimental animals. And so the studies that are done, which often are looking at single nutrients or even when they're looking at dietary patterns, require very fancy statistics and a lot of interpretation and understanding them in context. And I know it seems like nutrition research changes all the time, but it really doesn't, because dietary recommendations have been the same for the last 50 years.
Mm-hmm, that's right. You know, I loved your comment about evidence-based data. I think that's what you used, and how that doesn't really fit into people and nutrition. And
well, when I hear people talking about evidence about nutrition must be science-based, I know they have a point of view that they're trying to argue about.
Yes. Christine and I are nutritionists with masters in nutrition. We're not we're not registered dietitians.
Right.
And neither am I.
And I loved the thing you were talking about, the American Dietetics Association, which really governs the RDs. You know, don't they have a partnership with Pepsi?
Oh, they have a partnership with an enormous number of food companies, and many of the dietitians who are part of the American Dietetic Association are people who work for food companies. It's where a lot of dietitians get jobs, and so they have what I would consider to be a bias, just as people who work in government have a bias, or people who work in universities may have a different kind of bias. But working for a food company is not recognized as a bias.
Oh.
And the thing that the American Dietetic Association does that bothers me the most is it has a series of fact sheets that it puts on the web and in its journal that are used as educational handouts mm-hmm. for the general public, each one with its own corporate sponsor.
Right.
And
yeah.
So if I gave you the subject of what it was going to be, you could probably guess who the sponsor was, and you'd be right.
Yes.
Most of the time.
And I don't think people realize that at all.
No.
But no, it's great. It's great having you on the show. You know, Marion, we're going to take a caller. Mary, you have a comment for us? Hi there. Thanks for waiting so long for us.
Hi. Are you asking me?
Yes, I am.
Oh, sorry. Okay, hi. My name's Mary. I'm not sure if you guys can answer this. I was watching a program quite some time ago, and it was on a school out in the East Coast that they made all their own food from, like, local farmers. So they were really teaching, you know, the authentic way and, you know, right from the ground up kind of thing. And I just thought that was so interesting. I thought, gosh, whose program is this? And I didn't get all the information. I think I caught it right at the end. And I just, I'm curious, does that sound familiar at all? Have you ever heard of something like that?
Oh,
where,
absolutely.
I mean, it's probably a private school or something.
No, without any, well, there's a private school in Manhattan that has an extraordinary.
What is that?
I'm sorry?
I can barely hear you. Sorry.
I said there's a private school in Manhattan that has an extraordinary food program that they brought in. It's a private school, and it's called the Calhoun School, and it's the person who runs the program, Chef Bobo, he calls himself, actually has a cookbook that's out that you can get and see the kinds of recipes that he makes in the school, but also see exactly how he brought that program into the school and how he essentially convinced teachers, parents, the kids, and everybody else connected with the school that this was a good thing to do for everybody. And it took a few months to get it established, and everybody was kind of miffed. But once it got established, people got really excited about it. The kids were interested in cooking. They complained to their parents that the food in school was better than what they were getting at home. The kids stopped going out to get fast food. The teachers said the kids were behaving better. And all it is adult food. It's just real food, the kind of food that adults would eat if they weren't eating a lot of junk food. And the kids have a choice of a few things, and the food tastes good. And guess what? They like it. And they bring it in at the same cost as the city schools do, pretty much.
Sal, great comment, and thank you for the call. And we're going to have to take a break. You know, on page 514 of the book, What to Eat, Dr. Marion Nessel states that sugar is the first ingredient in whole grain cocoa puffs, and that's by General Mills. Furthermore, it contains only 1 gram of fiber, but it's called whole grain. And Marion's a great guest today, and if you have more questions for us, for her, call us at 651-641-1071. And if you didn't get your question answered, you know, this today, and you want to talk to Christina or myself next week, just call us at our office. It is 651-699-3438, and we'll be back in a minute.
Sugar, sugar. What is your favorite sweet indulgence? Brownies? Pastries? Cookies? Frappuccinos? Anything chocolate? We all enjoy a treat. But if you treat every day like Halloween, perhaps it's time to rein in that sweet tooth. Research shows that cravings have biochemical origins. That's right. They're not just sugar lust. The solution? Get to the source. Luckily, we don't have to do this alone. The friendly staff at Nutritional Weight and Wellness has worked with hundreds of people who wanted to break their sugar habits, eat healthier, and feel better. Sugar saps your energy, weakens your immune system, and is highly addictive. We have all seen how sugar affects children, but adults get hooked just as easily. Others rely on artificial sweeteners that are full of chemicals, believing those substitutes are healthier than sugar. Before you refill that candy dish, pick up the phone and find out how Nutritional Weight and Wellness can help you eliminate your sugar cravings. Imagine eating in a way that leaves you satisfied, gives you more energy, and a trimmer waistline. Office is conveniently located in St. Paul, Wayzata, and White Bear Lake.
You are listening to Dishing Up Nutrition, and our special guest today has been Marion Nessel, the author of Food Politics, an award-winning book, and her most recent book, What to Eat, which takes us through the supermarket, teaching us how to pick healthy foods to put in our shopping cart. And Dar and I thank Marion so much for being part of Dishing Up Nutrition today, and we really do appreciate her knowledge and even more her passion to inform the public.
You know, Marion, we have maybe less than 2 minutes, but one of the things that I know you're really adamant about is the farm bill, and we are in Minnesota in corn country.
You are.
And I just wanted to take a minute or two, and, you know, I have friends that are getting lots of money from the government that are corn farmers, and then I have a friend that is an organic farmer that is getting nothing. Can you just comment just 2 seconds worth?
Well, the Farm Bill is part of the long history of American agriculture, and the Department of Agriculture has always supported industrial agriculture, and as more and more people are interested in changing that and in having an agricultural system that makes food fresher and more organic and doesn't use artificial pesticides or fertilizers, there's more and more pressure on the Farm Bill to try to not only make it healthier for the environment, but also for people. So the surpluses that we have in corn and soybeans, maybe we could take some of that and rearrange the farm production system so that we grow more fruits and vegetables.
I think that would be a wonderful solution.
And you've got the Institute for Agriculture and Trade Policy in Minneapolis, which is working really hard on those questions.
Oh, that's great. Well, Marion, we really do appreciate you being on the show. I know you're
an
extremely busy lady, and it's been a great having you here. So thank you, everyone, for listening to Dishing Up Nutrition. And remember, the magic in you is the real food that you eat. Thank you.
Life, I love you. All is groovy.